This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com. Tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else. This episode is brought to you by Lincoln and the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid, featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God, the world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
Welcome to Through the Ringer. I'm your host, Tate Frazier. We got a fun show here on Tuesday. In case you missed it, we got Kevin O'Connor and Cousin Sal on the show. And now I bring him into the show. He is the Ringer's very own, Kevin O'Connor. Great to see you, KOC.
Good to see you as well, Tate. How you doing?
I'm doing well. And we got a lot to talk about because the NBA is the big ticket conversation. I'm a college basketball guy, so you know I like talking about college basketball. But let's talk about the pros here, Kevin. And we got some trends that we want to talk about. We love starting out with what's trending in basketball. And the top trend that we have right now from your vantage point is, good news, folks, scoring is down. That's the new word, right, KOC?
Well, on Sunday, we had an interesting game. The Clippers beat the Wolves 89-88.
Oh, felt like the old days.
It does. And that was the first game of the entire season in which both teams scored in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And this game came days after Tom Haberstroh wrote on his Substack, The Finder, a great story analyzing how scoring was way down in February. So you can see on this graphic on screen here, Tate, how scoring was way down by 10% in February. And granted, it's a smaller sample size of games. The All-Star break took place and all that. 20.6 free throws, a season low per 100 possessions in the month of February. So I think this month, Tom, you know, you could say it's lower three-point percentage, lower two-point percentage, but those numbers were consistent every month of the year. Free throws were the only thing that were down. And so I think it's not a coincidence that after Luka scores 70 and you got Embiid and all these other guys scoring 60 points in a matter of weeks, you got Adam Silver, All-Star weekend. He's like, congrats, you guys scored the most points. He's like, all disappointed.
It was an eye roll moment, right?
Yes. I don't think it's coincidence here that scoring is down here. And if you watch some of the games, I mean, you can nitpick little anecdotal examples of where, like, it seems like maybe a little bit of hand-checking is allowed. I thought on Sunday's game between the Suns and the Thunder, there's a possession in the second half where Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was, like, swiping at Kevin Durant on a drive to the rim, who eventually kind of just tossed the ball up in, like, a missed shot in the box score, but it was more like a turnover. And it was just, like, one good example where it was like, okay, the NBA is allowing more of this contact on drives to the rim, and they're not blowing the whistle as much, where I think those stats are an early indicator of what's changing right now, that the league is allowing more toughness on defense. And we'll see if it sustains through March and April, though. But it's interesting trying to monitor.
Well, they called Joe Dumars, legendary two-time NBA champion Joe Dumars, obviously a one-time champ as an executive as well with the Pistons in 2004. But Joe Dumars was kind of tasked with the idea of, how do we fix defense in the NBA? And when you talk to all the old heads, they say hand-checking, they say being more physical. This is the stuff that we try to take away from the game to help with the offensive side of things. People have said the cat is out of the bag, but it looks like we might be able to get that cat back in the bag. And it's good news for, you know, the people that want to see kind of that old style of NBA basketball. So encouraging signs, I would say. And we like nostalgia, so I'll go with my top trend, bank shots. This is a very throwback move that we've seen. You mentioned the Wolves-Clippers game. Anthony Edwards, it's not just bank shots. He loves the glass, but he loves banked in threes. This is a quote from Anthony Edwards he had the other night. He said, I had already made up my mind, like, if I get this open look, I'm just going to try to go glass, and it didn't go as planned. He bricked that three-point attempt, but his coach talked about keeping him engaged in games. He's like, when Anthony Edwards is trying to bank in threes and trying to use the backboard, we see a better version of Anthony Edwards. How much of a fascinating trend is this, and how much of this is like a Tim Duncan residual effect? Because Tim Duncan loved the backboard.
The Tim Duncan influence.
Yeah, I like it. I've heard the Kobe influence influence, but I want the Tim Duncan influence.
I mean, I think this is partially Anthony Edwards just being bored.
I think so, too. He's a funny guy. Yeah,
hey,
we
saw
this.
Him shoot all left-handed shots All-Star weekend, which did not go very well for him. Doing the bank shot threes right now. It seems to me that he's just a young player trying to find ways to compete against himself during the regular season, but it's cool to see a guy like Ant be, you know, creative and try to find other ways to score. Mm. It seems like the mid-range bank shot's more valuable than a three-point bank shot, though. Yeah. I would think so.
I would think so, too, but it does kind of beckons back to an old and bygone era. I'm sure, you know, like the Cousy era would respect a banked-in three as long as he calls bank, and I think Ant is calling bank. It's his new thing. Mm-hmm. So Kyrie Irving, I want to give him a shout-out as well. He is someone that has always used the glass to his favor and has mastered that art. So Anthony Edwards falling in line there. What we do after the trending is we do superlatives. So we got some fun superlatives this week. I want to start with the half of the week. Let's talk about the Boston Celtics. They scored an incredible 82 points. That is right, 82 points against the Warriors, 20 assists, one turnover, and they held the Warriors to just 38 points, largest deficit of the season for Golden State. And Steph Curry after the game said, that's what we used to do to teams. How remarkable of a half was this for Boston?
I mean, it was amazing and also surprising in some ways because they straight out of the gates, they just weren't defending Jaylen Brown.
Mm-hmm.
It is reflective of the amount of options they have, where it's always somebody. They didn't even have Kristaps Porzingis in that game.
Right. Sitting down, street clothes.
Always somebody. So I think with Boston, they can. I had five of their players in my top 50 that we looked at last week. Derek White, Porzingis, Jaylen Brown, Drew Holiday, Jason Tatum. All five of that guys in your starting five or your ending five, and then you have Al Horford coming off the bench. You have a Peyton Pritchard, Luke Kornet, if you want. And
Luke Kornet's been great. Yeah.
They have a lot of different guys. Sam Hauser. They have a good, deep team with a lot of different options. I thought that Warriors game was indicative of how they just have every guy on the floor at times can go off.
Yeah, and it's encouraging to see from the Celtics standpoint. But on the Warriors side, I just want to quickly hit that. I mean, Bob Myers, he's there at halftime. They were asking him about the game. He did not want to know the score. He did not want them to say the score, trying to defend his old team. But how worrisome is this if you're a Warriors fan, or do you just say, hey, it's just an L, just try to wipe the slate clean. We made a decision. The decision backfired with Jaylen Brown, and we move forward.
I think you toss it. For that reason, it was just Boston was unbelievable in that game. You just tossed it.
They made you pay for a decision that you would have made in the playoffs, right? It was a very strange thing that happened where it just perfectly played into their hands.
It was just weird. Mm-hmm. It's just weird that they decided to do that. It's almost as if they knew there's a chance it would just destroy them in that game, but they were willing to take the risk to see how it worked.
Streak of the week. The Celtics are streaking in a good way. There's a team in the East that is streaking the wrong way, and that is the Wizards, and the Wizards losing streak right now. The Wizards have lost 14 straight games on their way to breaking the franchise record of 17 straight losses. What do we think about the Wizards? I mean, there was a lot of excitement early in the season about Jordan Poole, Kyle Kuzma, a little two-headed monster.
The excitement did not last long.
I'm sort of laughing as I say that, but it just seems like it's completely backfired. Like, what is going on in Washington right now?
These guys are just – it's a losing team without not a lot of good. They have Jordan Poole coming off the bench, and he's been better statistically off the bench, but he is in no way a franchise, a top three guy on your team at all. So for Washington, the team just stinks. Mm-hmm. They are unwatchable, but they have, two or three guys that you look at on the roster and you're like, okay, there's something here, but we don't have much of anything else. And we probably have the least amount of talent in the league.
Is it worth tanking, though? I mean, I feel like this is the draft. Everyone has been killing this draft for the talent.
They stink so much that they don't have to try to tank. They just are tankers.
They just are who they are. Yes. Yeah, they are the tankers. So maybe I've been talking about the Washington rebrand. Maybe the Washington tankers, what I mean? And they're in D.C. Maybe there's something there, Commander-in-Chief. I don't know. Last superlative this week, we got Rookie of the Week. Your guy, Baylor Bear himself, Keyonte George, playing for the Utah Jazz. What have you liked from him, and what have you seen so far?
Keyonte George, ever since mid to late January, he's been given 20-plus minutes per game. It's been 14 straight games that he's been given 20 minutes or more. In those games, he's averaging 16.5 points, shooting over 40% from three, over 70% in the restricted area, and he's having double the assist to turnovers right now. It's about 5 assists per game to 2.5 turnovers per game. He is, at this point, becoming a legitimate three-level scorer. He had 33 points against the Warriors, 34 points against the Heat just this past weekend, looking the part of a guy who is comfortable at the rim against length, comfortable pulling up from three, comfortable off the catch. And when I interviewed him back in December for a story that ran in mid-January on The Ringer.
Good story. Go read it. Ringer.com.
One of the things Kingafdia and I talked about was how his three-point shot was not falling yet. Mm-hmm. He was in the low 30s earlier in the season with the Jazz, just like he was with Baylor last year.
Right.
And I said to him, like, this feels like the final piece for you offensively. You're getting to the rim. You're playmaking. You're defending harder. What needs to happen for your three-point shot to finally click? You have good touch. And he's like, it's just going to take time for me to get stronger. I need to get stronger physically. I'm already getting comfortable to the pace of the game, the speed of the game. Maybe something clicked with him physically because the shot is looking really good at a time that a lot of rookies might start to hit a wall.
Right.
He is starting to thrive in a really big, big way. And you look at the way he improved physically from Baylor, where he was a little bit out of shape compared to his rookie season. Maybe it actually is clicking physically for mm-hmm. him right now, where the shot is finally falling, because he looks legit.
And he's a lottery talent, and mm-hmm. I think that's the most encouraging spot, is that he looks good when most rookies start to hit that wall and they go the opposite direction. Yes. He's kind of pushing through it. So I've been a big fan since he was at Baylor, so I love that. We talked about a rookie of the week. Now let's talk about a new kid on the block, a guy who will be on KOC's draft board, I'm very sure.
Number one.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he is. I mean, people love him, and Robbie Avila is his name. There are a lot of nicknames for Robbie. He's playing at Indiana State. The first time we've seen the Sycamores at this level, supposedly, hopefully, will be in March Madness as either an at-large team or they could win their conference tournament. But your thoughts when you first saw Robbie Avila there at Indiana State? He's kind of like Jokic for college basketball.
Yeah, very white, very big.
Mm-hmm. Very good passer, very good shooter, KOC. It's a
great feel for the game.
Right. A lot of moxie, yes, right? That's what
exactly,
people want to
yeah.
see here.
I mean, he's a very fun player for sure.
Mm-hmm. He's got the rec specs. I feel like that always helps.
Shades of like a player from the 80s.
He literally has shades on his face. Mm-hmm. You know what yes. I mean? Shades of other mm-hmm. guys with shades. Mm-hmm. We love that. There's also some nicknames that I want to get your reaction to. We got Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, emphasis on Kareem. We got Larry Nerd. Which I think is
a good one.
That's what his coach likes, Josh Ertz. He said that's the best one, Larry Nerd. Do you have a name or nickname for him?
It's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Okay,
it's
right.
just perfect.
Yeah,
it genuinely is a perfect nickname, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
And will you be watching him? Like when you watch him March Madness, as we get closer there, Selection Sunday is on March 17th. Happy St. Paddy's Day to everybody. Also, happy Selection Sunday. Is there a matchup that you're looking forward to watch him go against, maybe a more mobile big, or like how do you kind of forecast what you're going to see in March from Robbie?
I mean, I think obviously you'd like to see him against lottery talent.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a ton of lottery talent this year from college basketball. It's a very international heavy draft. But I think, you know, seeing him go against a behemoth like a Zach Edey would be very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Filipowski from Duke or Donovan Klingon from UConn. Just right. one of those types
Hunter
of matchups.
Dickinson, Armando Bacot, right.
Something like that. Just to see him go against a well-known name, a known commodity, or a lottery talent. Something like that I hope we end up getting.
And if you were to forecast, I mean, 6'10", a sophomore, like I said, got great handles, great vision, good jump shot. Can we forecast him? Like, is he a first-round pick, second-round pick? Like, Where could we see Robbie going realistically?
I think he should go back to school and prove that he can defend at an NBA level.
Yeah.
I think you see the way Zach Edey has improved year by year for Purdue. Granted, they're different types of player. Edey is a 7'4", you know, 300-plus pound guy.
Mm-hmm.
He has improved his mobility year by year to the point that it's like, okay, maybe he can survive on defense. So I think that's going to be the key there for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
I love the nickname. Robbie Avila, if you don't know the name, you will know it very soon. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to do the MVP power rankings of KOC. We'll be right back on Through the Ringer.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
Welcome back to Through the Ringer. We're here with Kevin O'Connor and KOC. We're talking power rankings. We love power rankings across the board. And we want to talk about some MVP power rankings because this is a big hot button issue right now. Everybody's trying to figure out who is actually the MVP of the NBA. And there's a lot of people that think it's five guys that are in the race. You say it's a two-man race. Is that correct?
I believe it's a two-man race.
Okay.
I think all the talk about Tatum... All the stuff out there. A lot of Tatum talk. I think all the stuff out there about Luka and all the SGA stuff pales in comparison to the two leading candidates, in my opinion, Nikola Jokic and Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Ooh.
Those two guys, in my opinion. Jokic is the favorite with the FanDuel rankings. If you're looking at the odds, Giannis is fifth behind some of those other guys. I just think Giannis this year is incredibly underrated at this point. He is shooting over 60% from the field and over 30 points per game. The first player all time to do that in many, many years. He has been dominant defensively under Doc Rivers' defense ever since he took over. They have a top five defensive rating in the league. Him playing alongside Brook Lopez, protecting the rim. You look at the odds on screen here. You got Jokic at plus 150. I think that's fair.
He's Jokic the favorite, right?
Number one in my odds, which I think is completely fair. But Giannis at plus 1,200 to me is amazing value at this point when you consider how dominant he has been on both ends of the floor. Jokic, you can say the same exact thing. Jokic has been great defensively for Denver. SGA, I think, is a worthy third-place guy right now. Luka, just not good enough defensively, in my opinion. Dallas, not at the top of the standings either. That it will work against him. And then with Tatum, the Celtics are so loaded. I mean, Tatum has talked about how, well, I'm not asked to do as much as some of these other guys. That's why I don't put up as big of numbers. Well, that's also why you're not a leading MVP candidate, in my opinion. You could argue Kawhi should possibly be over him in the fifth slot. I just think Jokic and Giannis, to me, are the clear-cut one and two in the MVP race right now. And at this point, aside from maybe a little bit of SGA, maybe Dallas with Luka, if they were to rise up the standings, you could get back in it. But with 1 month to go, until award voting really begins, to me, I'm really just looking at Jokic and Giannis at this current time.
And it kind of feels like over the past, 4 or 5 years at this point, it's kind of been a three-headed monster for MVP. It's Joel Embiid, who finally got his first MVP last year. It's Nikola Jokic, who went back-to-back, and then Giannis, who went back-to-back, right? So it's been those three guys. And Giannis, Doc Rivers had a great quote when he was asked about Giannis's MVP chances. He said, quote, "I don't even want to get into it, but there's been guys that you get tired of voting for. Michael Jordan, good comp, maybe the poster child of that, and Giannis seems to be in that category where you're so good, everything you do gets taken for granted." LeBron, obviously, in that same conversation for so long. Do we think that we're getting in that territory with Giannis where it's an expectation, so therefore there's no appreciation?
Sure. I do think that's part of it with Giannis. I think the Bucks being kind of this weird team throughout the year as well has played into it as well, where their defense was not great earlier in the season. They fire their head coach. They don't feel like they're as great as they should be. They're 7-8 games behind Boston right now. That has all worked against Giannis in this conversation, which I think is reflected in the odds. But the reason why they are not, you know, this middle of the pack team is because of the way Giannis just dragged them to win after win after win, despite their horrific coaching under Adrian Griffin earlier in the year. And now that they have a competent coaching staff and their defense is thriving, you have Giannis playing maybe better than he ever has at the moment. His three-point shot is falling at the moment. The mid-ranger is falling at the moment. His free throws are up right now. So on top of being the most dominant force at the rim in the entire league, at this time he is also a threat from the outside. On top of, like we looked at last week on the show, Tate, with his long ball passing, the outlet passing, the kick-out passing, his playmaking is elite as well for a player with his skill set. So I think with Giannis, he's underrated in the sense of looking at the MVP ratings right now, the rankings right now, because we're always looking for something new. But to me, this year is more about the guys we've already known for years now with Jokic and Giannis. I think it should be one of those two again.
And it did feel like at a certain time, 2021, that Giannis was going to get that baton, that proverbial baton passed to him as you are the face of the league. He seemingly didn't want to be the face of the league. Now Jokic just kind of stepped in as the quote-unquote face of the league. And now we get a situation where if things break the right way, I mean, if we got a Bucks-Nuggets final and we got Giannis taking on Jokic, I mean, I think that's blockbuster. I mean, I think everybody would be watching that. And it's not, you know, the American guys that we've seen in the past, but it is one of the better matchups you can imagine in the NBA Finals.
Oh, that would be absolutely sensational. Really, it would be a battle between Jokic is widely considered the best player in the world right now, but he took that from Giannis.
Yes, and I don't think Giannis gave it to him. I think Giannis still thinks that he has it.
And I think that series would be a battle for that title. Both those teams are really trending up. There's really only one or two other teams that I think you could argue could take him down, and that's Boston. You have to give them the respect in the Eastern Conference. And then out West, I'm not sure there really is one against Denver. OKC's so young. They don't have the size against Jokic. Mm-hmm. All those older veteran teams like the Warriors and the Lakers.
Minnesota is the team that's built to beat the
Nuggets. Gotta be Minnesota, right? With their size, with Rudy Gobert and Karl Anthony Towns and Naz Reid, it's gotta be Minnesota to me. Like, if you look at all the other teams, not enough defense for some of them, like with Dallas, it's gotta be Minnesota. But then again, do they have enough offense? When Minnesota, Denver, they just go to the Jokic-Murray two-man game or the Jokic-Gordon two-man game.
I think Jokic-Gordon is unstoppable.
Oh, my God. Lob near the rim, right. There's nothing you can do about it.
That's why I think Giannis and Brooke Lopez are like the two that are suited to guard that the best. And you and I were talking off air before this. I mean, there's a world in which Nikola Jokic, when he's done, he is considered the greatest center ever. There's a consideration that when Giannis is done, he could be the greatest power forward ever. So, I mean, these are two guys that could be playing in their primes in the NBA Finals if things break the right way. And I feel like I want to hammer that point home, because if you're a basketball fan, now's the time to tune in, because that would be incredible to see.
And if not the best, one of the best. And that alone is a very special title to have, because those guys are absolutely sensational, and they continue to find ways to get better. Jokic defensively, Giannis working on his perimeter game and playmaking, they have not been complacent at all with their own skills.
And they're small market lifers. You talk about the affability of it all. I mean, these guys are playing in Milwaukee and Denver, and they don't seem like they want to go anywhere. In fact, they're trying to bring people there, which is encouraging for the NBA at large.
They are genuinely perfect faces of the league.
Yeah.
In that sense.
Right.
They are.
They're the best. Let's do a little Tuesday NBA game preview. We got the Celtics taking on the Cavs. The Celtics, like we said, they look like juggernauts right now in the Eastern Conference. But we got the Cleveland Cavaliers that a lot of people have slept on. They're two in the East right now. They got a lot of talent. Is this a chance for the Cavs to kind of send a message in Cleveland to say, hey, we're here, we're a contender, and we can compete with the Boston Celtics?
For sure. I mean, Boston's riding a long win streak. This is an opportunity to show that you are a legitimate team against Boston. I think with Cleveland, there's been so many ups and downs with them. They had the long win streak midseason. They continued to thrive once Evan Mobley and Donovan Mitchell returned. A bit more closer to 500 right now. They're not quite as hot at this moment. But I think with this team, they are just not quite on that level, in my opinion. I don't think they are a finals contender. I wouldn't put them on the same level as Milwaukee or Boston, or even a healthy Philadelphia team if Joel Embiid were to return, or a healthy Knicks team, for that matter.
Right.
I still have that Knicks-Cavs series in the back of my mind, no matter what you see this
year.
And
you saw the toughness in that series with the Knicks and the coaching of the Knicks that made a difference as well. So that's another factor.
And not to mention the Miami Heat.
Coaching.
The Heat. Exactly. So I think with the Cavs, I just don't view them on the same level as any of those teams. But this is the type of premier matchup you're talking about, where if you can end the Celtics' long winning streak and do it in a fashion that's not just cold shooting night against the opponent. If you win with your matchups, if you lock down a Jason Tatum on ball, if you come with a strong game plan, that can give you increased confidence for what this team can be in the postseason.
Yeah, I am excited to see what Cleveland can do. I do like a lot of their pieces. As you know, I'm a big Evan Mobley fan, and I like Jared Allen. I like their front line because I love the bigs, and I think they got the bigs there to make things happen. Next game, we got the Suns taking on the Nuggets. Booker is out in this one. The Suns have been trying to find their footing. I mean, they feel like a play-in team at this point, but is this a chance for the Suns to kind of show who they are against a Nuggets team without Booker?
I don't like their odds.
I don't either. Not in Denver. I don't.
I think that game against OKC the other night, when Nurkic has 31 rebounds and he is their energizer, and they lose by 8 to Oklahoma City. And Kevin Durant is getting doubles thrown at him, and he's late to make the pass. He's having some sloppy turnovers. I can't help but watch this team and still think, like they need that stabilizer. Mm-hmm. Booker can be the point guard sometimes, but Beal with 7 turnovers that night, some real sloppy decisions. KD, I just mentioned. Sometimes I wish they did have that traditional point guard instead of Bradley Beal.
Yeah.
I wish they had
Chris Paul. That would be nice.
I mean, maybe like a younger Chris Paul. Yeah. Would, ideally, not the current Chris Paul, but just somebody like that to just stabilize things. Mm-hmm. Because like, it's almost not like you look at the names on the paper, Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal. It's not because they're selfish. It's not because they're sharing the ball. It's almost because like they're sharing the ball too much.
Yeah.
And they just don't have somebody who can help dictate things and facilitate mm-hmm. for your team and put players in positions.
Yeah, you go, I go offense. Yes. Right.
And so I think with Phoenix, that's the one thought that I have on my mind watching them. And we'll see how that manifests over the course of the rest of the season, then potentially the play-in, and you would hope the playoffs if you're the Suns. But you invested all that into a team that's just in the play-in bubble. That's still an underwhelming season for
you. Yeah, it's a big knock on super teams, which was the hot topic for about a decade. It does feel like we're getting down to the end of that road, so to speak. So, KOC, thanks so much for being on the show. Where can we find all your work? And we'll let you go enjoy your Tuesday.
Over at TheRinger.com.
I love it. The Mismatch podcast you should also listen to as well. I appreciate you coming on the show, KOC. Coming up right after the break, we have the great Cousin Sal joining us, and we're going to have some fun. We'll see you in a sec.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower what's next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
Welcome back to Through the Ringer. I'm still your host, Tate Frazier, and joining us as he always does on Tuesdays, it is Cousin Sal. Sal, great to see you, man.
Tate, great to see you, and even better to see us color coordinating here in honor of the great Duke Blue Devils. We did it. Whatever. This is Tar Heels? What's the difference, right?
Yeah, they're basically the same thing. You know what I mean? They're both 8 miles apart, right on Tobacco Road. But yeah, we'll talk about Carolina Duke a little bit later. I'm excited to get your thoughts in. You got the right shade of blue on Sal, so I do like to see that. And guess what? We get to play my favorite game, and we get to do it again. Are you excited to play over-under reactions?
I am, only because it gets you excited. I'm okay with it. I feel like it's ho-hum, but whatever. I you get a smile on your face, so let's do it.
I just like making you play a game, and this is a fun one. So we'll start with the number one storyline in the NBA for what? Going on a decade and plus at this point, but number one story here, Sal. We need to celebrate fewer LeBron milestones. Is that an over or under reaction? Just got 40,000 points in the NBA.
I think it's an underreaction. By the way, I think they've already taken your lead. They're not really celebrating the milestones. The 40,000th point is something maybe the media made a bigger deal out of than the actual, Staples Center or wherever they play crypto. I feel like they asked LeBron, like, hey, do you want us to make a big deal out of it? And he's like, no, let's go on with this. Let Jokic kick our ass. Yeah. And then I can go home and go to sleep because the sports guy was there. He's like, they didn't even stop the game. I guess they had, after the commercial timeout, they had a long tribute, video tribute and whatever. But yeah, I don't know that we need to celebrate all these LeBron moments. Maybe celebrate every third or fourth Taco Tuesday. That seems like a good compromise.
I think that's a great compromise. And, shout out to everybody celebrating Taco Tuesdays today. So I hope everybody has a good time. Right. Next one who just continues to break streaks herself, Caitlin Clark is the most likable star in sports. Over or under reaction, Sal?
I'm going to say slightly overreaction here. I mean, I like her a lot as a friend. No, I like her a lot. She's determined as an intense an athlete, as you'll see there. She turned women's basketball around. But I could do without a couple of these flops, Tate. You know, I feel like you can get a little bit out of hand with that. You know, that last flop allowed our friend Harry to win a bet, which was Caitlin Clark to break the NCAA record via free throw. She got two technical shots out of that, and he won at 9-1. And no one wants to see him win. I know it's a weird connection, but yeah, that's why I would say she's maybe not the most likable.
Yeah, I do think a lot of people were upset about the flopping, and I will say it would have been cool if Caitlin decided not to shoot those free throws and waited till the third quarter when I had my bet for her to break the record. And, you know, Harry got to do his victory lap. So at the end of the day, he and Caitlin are the big winners. Next one, Sal. Connecticut to repeat, the most likely to repeat since Florida 07 in men's college basketball. Is that an over or under reaction?
Right, because Villanova did it in 16 and 18, right? They
Close.
Took 17 off. That's right. They were right there. I'm going to say it's a little bit of an overreaction. I know they're the odds-on favorites to repeat at 5-1 right now, but I look at that Houston team. They are very tough. That Oklahoma game the other day, that's one they easily could have given up, and they fought, and they're just rolling their way through that Big 12. I still have Marquette at 25-1, so I'm not even sure what UConn in the you know, same conference what I'm doing here, but they have to get a little healthier. So I'm going to say it's slight overreaction, but will you like them to go all the way?
Yeah, I do think this could be the year that it happens. It does feel like a 91-92 kind of Duke run for this Connecticut team, and Dan Hurley seems like the right man for the job. Tristan Newton, their point guard, Bob Cousy, probably award winner. We'll see what happens there. I mean, he said winning the Big East was harder than winning the national championship. So that gives you a little bit of a mindset into this team, even though they lost a lot of talent from last year. So I'm excited to see.
Isn't winning the Big East like winning the outright Big East?
Yes, the outright. All right, well, yeah, first time since 1999 for the Huskies, so they're very excited. Excited. Let's switch from basketball to football. The NFL Combine, Sal, should be a week-long primetime TV event. Is that an over or under reaction?
Well, I think it's an overreaction unless they change some of these events. By the way, I won money on it. My prop of the year in the Combine was under 4.25 for the fastest runner, and then you had Xavier Worthy, a wide receiver for Texas, clocking in, breaking the record at 4.21. Not good news for him, because he joins a long list of John Rosses out there who never really materialized in the NFL. But they have to change it up, Tate. If this is going to be a week-long event, forget the verticals and the cone drills. Those are out. Let's do tush pushes and pylon dives, something with the more situational, you know? Like we mentioned, tackle the streaker on Against All Odds. We thought that would be good. How about So You Think You Can Touchdown Dance? Little, you know, this is stuff that people are tuning in for. So then we can make it a week longer.
I like it. Show us your celebrations. We want to see that. We want to see if you can actually get our popcorn out and get us watching football. So I think that's a great point. Next one, Sal. The Falcons, in case you missed it, Russell Wilson just got released by the Broncos. He will be released on March 13th. The Falcons are the best fit for Russell Wilson moving forward. Over or under reaction, Sal?
Well, I'd have to say overreaction, because they have a no high stepping policy on their planes. So I don't know. You know, when Russ likes to stretch out. Now, I don't know. Listen, I'm going to be just like I was last year with the NFC South. Any serviceable quarterback that goes there is a valuable cog to the offense, right? And by the way, he was very good last year. Russell had one of his best years, 26 touchdowns, I believe, 8 interceptions. So Raheem Morris, I think, would be lucky to get him. And it's not like, oh, Baker Mayfield has locked up this division for years and years to come. Russell Wilson could step in with that Falcons team and win the division. So I think that's a nice matchup.
Yeah, and I've heard a lot of people talking about Justin Fields and how he fits in down there in Atlanta. But I think Russell Wilson, I mean, his wife has been a big part of the conversation. She's literally from College Park, in Georgia. So she's in familiar territory. So I think it's a win-win for everybody. And Russell Wilson in Atlanta would be a pretty big win for him, I think. So I like that fit. Next one, Sal. NFL team should stay away from Kirk Cousins after his injury last season. Is that an over-under reaction?
You know, I should maybe stay away from any Kirk Cousins questions. I don't know. The guy's proven me wrong for years. He just keeps getting paid and paid. So it doesn't matter what I say. He's probably going to get paid. But and for what, to be in that 7-12 range for quarterbacks who are going to have probably good regular seasons, but not going to be able to take this team to the promised land. He's got to run. I feel like the Vikings are talking about paying Justin Jefferson $30 million. Well, you're going to have a quarterback. You're going to have Cousins there for that to happen, for that to make sense. You're not going to go with Nick Mullins the rest of the way. So I think the answer is, what the hell was the question? Yeah, I think they are going to pay him And he's probably the best one out there.
Right? Yeah, I think he's going to get paid. And people forget, the San Francisco 49ers, Kyle Shanahan, they love Kirk Cousins. And they are, you know, not to say Purdy's going to be someone that's going to be replaced, but I feel like if he's out there in the market, there could be a chance some teams take a swing on him just because of how much he's liked by these other teams. So last one, Sal, last over-under reaction. Last week, Nick Saban said he wanted to be a czar and save college football. this week, I say to you, Johnny Manziel is the only person who can save college football. Overreaction, underreaction. He says he's not going to go to the Heisman ceremony until they give the Heisman back to Reggie Bush.
Well, hold on. I thought Nick Saban saved football like last Thursday or something.
Yeah, I think it Did we
check up on that? He hasn't saved college football?
He's all working right, on it, yeah. It was longer than 7 days. He's not God after all.
Yeah. Listen, I feel like Manziel is a lot more fun when he's talking about cocaine diets and things like that, and now he's getting righteous. But the truth is, after everything we've seen with gifts and favors and NIL now, can we give Reggie Bush back his trophy? Let's just give it back. Enough already. It's silly.
It's silly. And if you watch Reggie Bush play football back then, you understand just the fact that he was must-see TV at all times. And he did some ridiculous stuff in the Texas-USC National Championship game. If you haven't watched it, you should go watch it because it's one of the best sporting events I've ever watched as a kid. Really imprinted itself on me, and it's imprinted itself so much now that I still believe Mac Brown can win football games. So
that was the greatest college game I ever saw. But then, you know, then someone bought Reggie Bush a Pink's hot dog, and that was that. You got to really throw everything out the window.
Yeah, the NCAA seemingly never doing what they should be doing. So that is a tale as old as time. Let's go and call up the Riverboat Captain, Sal. We got a question this week. What is the most exciting but least valuable measurement in sports? This is based off the NFL Combine. Of course, best odds for this one is the 40-yard dash at 3-1. We got the home run distance at 5-1. NBA wingspans, shout out to John Hammond. He loves those at 10-1. Trevor Lawrence's hair length, 25-1 in the field at even odds. What say you, Cousin Sal?
Well, it might have changed now. The most, the most overrated measurement right now might be because of the Fanatics' new baseball pants. We might have to consider something there. But no, I'm going to say wingspan, Tate.
Like that.
Because what the hell does it matter? I mean, if you're going like this, this has not had any purpose since your mother said to you when you're 2 years old, how much do you love mommy? And you have to go, oh, no, more than that. So I don't know why it would matter that unless you were a bouncer trying to help somebody, but it doesn't really show any effect in the NBA. Maybe I'm saying it's overvalued because my wingspan is about 21 and a half inches. So, but other than that, I think that's my answer.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer. And I think the odds are great at 10-1 because at the end of the day, we hear about these 7-foot wingspans over and over again, but not a lot of times does it translate over. But hand size, I can get behind. I feel like having big hands in the NBA and as a quarterback is a pretty big deal, even though Jared Goff is kind of, taking care of that. So I like that 10-1 odds. We'll take that. We'll bet $100. We'll take 1,000 home and we'll be happy campers here with the Riverboat Captain. So I like that. And now, Sal, we get to have some fun in the offseason. We let you set the lines, and this week you're setting the lines on the Oscars. Is that correct?
Oh, this is my favorite game, I guess. I'm sorry. We can play more of your favorite game if you want. Yes, I'll be at the Oscars this week, Tate. We both have big weekends ahead. Yeah. Let's start it off with something easy, something dry. Oppenheimer over 6.5, over under 6.5 awards. One, they are nominated for 13.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I'm going to go over. I think it's an Oppenheimer weekend. I feel like just a little bit de facto because of the movie slate that came out this year. I just feel like Oppenheimer was the one that won everybody over. And if you really go down, I mean, directing Chris Nolan, I think he's going to win that. Cillian Murphy, I think he's going to win actor in a leading role. Robert Downey Jr., he's pretty much swept in the supporting role. So I think there's three right there. And then once you go through best picture. Sound, cinematography, if you keep going down the list, it adds up quickly. So I'm going to go over.
All right, I probably made it a little low. I probably should have made it higher. They're likely not going to piss off the guy who could build a bomb, right? The Academy.
Okay. I think it's a good veiled threat there from Christopher Nolan. He's like, I've had a bomb in pretty much all my movies. Exactly. So watch out.
My cousin Jimmy Kimmel is hosting once again. Yeah. I think the kid will do okay. Who knows? What do I know? I do know, though, his parents are going to be in the audience. -110 both ways, yes or no. Does he refer to his parents sitting in the audience?
I'm going to go yes, because I think this is a tried and true move that everybody can respect. We all have parents. We all deal with our parents. Our parents have a lot of pride in our successes, and I'm sure Jimmy's parents will be the same. And there's nothing like making fun and riffing off your parents to make you feel like you're having a good time amongst all the A-list celebrities. So I'm going to go with yes at minus 110. I think it's
okay. I think that's a good bet. You know, he hosted the Emmys a few years back and lost the Emmy for best late night talk show, variety, whatever, in a variety category, and then pointed to his parents and said it was their fault because they told him all his life how great he was.
Right.
And that put in a false impression, and he had security escort them out. So he's not above kicking his own parents out.
This is why yes is the best bet right there. I like that.
You got to go yes. All right, Oscar telecast 29 and a half minutes longer than Killers of the Flower Moon. Did you see this movie, Tate?
Yeah, very long movie. I learned a lot. I felt a lot. It moved me. You know, I think that's what those are all the things that you're supposed to say. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to go. I think it's going to be less than Killers of the Flower Moon. I'm going to go that way. I'm going to lean that direction because that was a very long movie.
I think that's smart. It'd be funny to see a cutaway of Scorsese sleeping through the Oscars. Like, that was too long for him. He expects everyone else to see it. Look, it took me four nights to watch that movie. Mm. I watched it at home. I should have gone to the theater. I made that mistake. But if I miss four sports centers because of a movie, it's too long, I'm going to say.
When did the three-hour movie become acceptable? That's the real question. I feel like
Marty
it's too
did
acceptable.
It.
Yeah, he did it.
Marty did it.
Crossed the threshold.
Marty. Yep. All right, does anyone run in and slap Ryan Gosling during the I'm Just Ken performance? Yes, plus 2,500.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think Will Smith is jealous of Ryan Gosling being a co-star of Margot Robbie. He's like, it should have been me after his time on Focus. I think that came out back in 2015. He's like, I should have been Ken. It should have been my moment. And I think he does it again. Why not run it back? It worked last time. It got our attention. So
I like it too. Sneak in there, Will. You're the designated slapper for every Oscar. If when people go long in their speeches or Gosling makes a fool of himself dancing and singing, he's our guy. Step up there, Will Smith.
And
that's my game.
I like the game. And last time Will Smith did that, right, he got an Oscar. So I think it's a good
it's
formula,
true.
Right?
Good luck.
Yeah, it's a good lead-in. I love that. I love when Sal sets the lines. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to do some line look-aheads with Cousin Sal. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
Welcome back to Through the Ringer. Still here with Cousin Sal. And now it's time to do some line look-aheads. It is NBA season. It is in full swing. And let's start with the best team in the NBA. Our boss, Bill Simmons, is very happy about this. The Boston Celtics taking on the Cleveland Cavaliers. We don't have a line in front of us. Donovan Mitchell just out because of a left bone bruise. He just got a shot, so he's not in this game. So the line is not live right now for us, Sal. But what are your thoughts on this matchup? And where do we feel about, or how do we feel about these Boston Celtics right now?
I don't care if they ever put it up, if it's 10 or 20 or 25. How could you go against the Celtics right now? They dismantled the Warriors. They kept Curry to 4 points. It was disgusting. Now it's all it's all with the three, the variance with the three. They made 25 threes. I think the Warriors made 7. So obviously there could be an off night, but there don't seem to be too many off nights with Brown and Tatum. So I'm going to take the Celtics here. Cavs laid an egg against the Knicks, and they had a lead actually, and blew it even with Brunson out. So I don't know. I don't know what to say about this. Two teams kind of going in different directions. Even without Porzingis, the Celtics seem to be just an A-plus team. So I'm going to take Boston here.
Yeah, it feels like Boston owns the East right now. And the most interesting thing to look to, let's track to the future here. Look at the coach of the year, because we talked about Tatum. He's now in the MVP conversation. Jaylen Brown getting a lot of pub. But Joe Mazzulla right now, plus 500 to be coach of the year, and they're running away with the East. Is it a savvy move, Sal, to maybe take that number at plus 500? Is there value there to take Mazzulla?
I think it is. Well, we know one guy who's going to vote for Missoula, right? I mean, he signs our paychecks. And yeah, he's going right. to vote. He's going to sign his name next to Missoula, and he's going to keep signing our checks, hopefully. But, you know, so I think I like it at 5-1. I saw it at plus 470. It's moving around. He was 14-1 last week, so you would have really cashed in there. Now you have the Oklahoma City coach, right? You have the T-Wolves coach. Those teams, if you go by wins above expectation, those coaches should probably get it. But for God's sakes, if you're not going to give Tatum the MVP, you got to work some of these Boston guys in there somehow. I like Missoula at 5-1.
Yeah, and the Boston media mafia, they work harder than anybody. So if they get together and decide Missoula's the guy, then he will be the guy and he'll win Coach of the Year. So I like that number. If you got it, at plus 1,400, then you're really doing some good stuff there. That was a good move. That was a good forecast. But next game, Sal, we got the San Antonio Spurs plus 6.5 taking on the Houston Rockets. Over under in this game, the line is 227.5 points. Who do you like in this one? Do you bet Wimby on the road in Houston?
I'm going to bet the Rockets. I'm surprised these teams haven't played more against each other than they did. Only twice they split. Houston won by 11. Spurs won by 4 in overtime. But Houston kind of beaten up on the Suns last few games, two out of the last three games. Jalen Green at 34. Van Fleet put up good numbers. They're 20-10 at home, which is pretty astounding for a team with a losing record like the Rockets have. Their losing record isn't as bad as the Spurs, who have won two in a row. I think they're poised to get slapped around. Give me Houston, lay the points.
Yeah, I like Houston there as well. Let's track to the future. Defensive player of the year is a conversation. Gobert's the heavy favorite at minus 750. Wembanyama sitting there at plus 900 and obviously picking up some steam as the season is rolling on. Is it worth taking a swing at the rookie Wembanyama to win defensive player of the year?
I don't know. I'm not going to take a swing. I'm going to back off and let these two Frenchmen, let them battle it out. This is a nasty French war here.
Yeah.
I think I would have to stay with Gobert here. You're not getting much value in minus 750. Three-time winner, 12 rebounds, over 2 blocks a game, and leads the NBA in defensive rating with 107.8 points per 100 possessions. That's what his team does. That's the stat I think they're looking at. Wemby's going to win his awards, but I think Gobert cashes in on a fourth.
Yeah, I just think he's the next one in line. You know, as soon as Gobert stops winning these, it's going to be Wembanyama's award to win. So not quite his time, but he's nipping at his heels already. Phoenix Suns, last game, Phoenix Suns plus 8.5 going to the defending champs, Denver Nuggets. 223.5 is the points in this game. And who do you, Sal, say is going to win? No Devin Booker in this one.
No Booker in this one. They fought hard Sunday night. The Suns did. But tough games, by the way, for Denver this week. They have this one and Boston later in the week. But I'm going to go Denver. They've won 6 in a row. They have the Suns number. They beat them by 8 twice. You know, everything's clicking for this Denver team. And like you said, without Booker, going to be a little bit out of sorts. Suns going on the road. And by the way, I don't know if you've seen those highlights, the alley-oops. There's a compilation of alley-oops from Jokic to Aaron Gordon, and they are insane. It really does look like the most unstoppable play we've ever seen.
Right, big to big. That is hard to stop, and it's impressive. Aaron Gordon, I think, is one of the most underrated players in all of basketball at this point. Let's track to the future here, looking at Western Conference champ. Denver, the favorite at plus 190. Clippers, plus 240. Then the odds go up significantly. OKC, plus 850. Phoenix, plus 900. And Minnesota, plus 950, even though they're first right now. What say you, Sal? Who do you like here to win the Western Conference?
Well, what I say is I'm an idiot and I go Boston, Denver to meet in the finals. So you get like plus 413 for that, but it can't be that easy, right, Tate? But I don't see any of these other West teams that could beat them 4 out of 7, right? Yeah. Just when you want to get behind the Clippers, they lay an egg against the Lakers the other day. They show they have the ability to collapse. Oklahoma City, Minnesota, just not there yet. Yeah, I'm going to take Denver to win this at plus 190.
I think that's a smart move. I think Minnesota is the team that's built to beat this team just because of the front court that they have. But the Clippers, you're relying on Daniel Tice. You're relying on Plumlee and Zubac. You know what I mean? Those are the three guys that you have to handle against Jokic. So it's hard for me to buy in on them stopping Jokic at some level. And I think Denver at a plus number is a pretty good spot. So I think Denver plus 190 is great. Now, last thing, Sal, before I let you go, it's time for the Tate debate. And it's a simple one. The Cameron Crazies, do they have the best home court advantage in all of sports? You know, I think a lot of people have pointed this out. Our friend Harry believes that GCU Grand Canyon has a better home court advantage. Carolina versus Duke, a rivalry for all ages. I am going to be in North Carolina this week. I'm going to have a live show on Friday. So excited to be back home, excited to be in Durham. We're going to have some fun with this. But what say you, Sal? Do you think the Cameron Crazies have the best environment in all of sports?
Yeah, well, Duke fans are better. Obama, Spike Lee, Seinfeld, Dr. Ken Jeong. You got a doctor in the house every game. I mean, that really helps. Now, listen, you've been there. You're obviously too biased to. Now, what I want to know is, since the heyday, right? I know you want to still think it's in the heyday. Since Roy Williams left, since Coach K left, who has kept the momentum more, would you say, out of those two? Be honest.
I would say that, I mean, Cameron is now corporate fandom, you know what I mean? Like, it's an experience, but also you're bringing, like, you know, the Apple president to come there and have a nice little meeting. Barack Obama came to watch Zion Williamson, right? You know, they paid these celebs to come in. Tony Romo, Jason Garrett, right? They get these guys to come in and make it a whole thing. But I think the real test of fandom is a neutral court. 2022 Final Four, Carolina versus Duke in the Final Four, Coach K's last game. And it was a well-matched environment. There were way more Carolina fans because they outnumbered Duke fans. But it was a nice back and forth. And I left that game saying, tip of the cap, respect to both sides. We do it with 23,000 seats. They do it with 8,000 seats. It's a little bit different of an environment. Right. But, you know, it's public versus private. And I'm always going to side with the public. So I think the Tar Heels are the pick.
$5 million, Tate. You can never root for the Tar Heels again. You have to wear Duke clothes the rest of your life. Do you do it? $5 million.
Definitely not. No. I want $50 million for that. Maybe more. We'll still.
I'm going to bring you a briefcase. I don't know where I'm going to get it. I'm going to get Simmons on this.
No.
$5 million.
That's true. Yeah. Maybe we can find out some sort of deal. But I want to wear my overalls that you got me. So.
We could spray paint those dark blue.
That's right. We'll see what we can do. We'll figure out the better blue. Sal, where can we find all your work? Then we'll let you go enjoy your Tuesday.
Against All Odds podcast on the Ringer Podcast Network. And Cousin Sal's Winning Weekend on Friday. We have Kenny Smith and the D3.
Love that. Kenny Smith's the best. We're going to take a quick break. Yeah. When we come back, we'll say goodbye and we'll see you in a few.